I don't see anyone drooling, so I think I'm okay.
Good afternoon. I'm happy to join us. My name is Priya Nalpur, and I'm currently a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Pennsylvania. After finishing my master's in public health, I went in to do my doctorate in education. So just so you know, my perspective is really pretty educational perspective on how education can help the rehabilitation of street youth. I have no disclosures to report as per APHA. And today what I'd really like to do is give you an overview of a sort of five-year project that I've been working on for my dissertation and after my dissertation on street youth in Tanzania. And I'd love any feedback you might have to offer to me at the very end. So I'll start with just talking a little bit about what I mean by human rights framework. So UNICEF defines human rights as those rights which are essential to live as human beings. There are rights that meet the basic standards without which people cannot survive and develop in dignity. So they are inherent to the human person, inalienable, and universal. So from an educational perspective, human rights education, or commonly referred to as HRE, is the process of teaching, enabling, and empowering an understanding of one's entitlements to human rights. HRE can have multiple audiences, so there's HRE for advocacy, including policymakers, there's HRE for communities, and there's also HRE for rehabilitation. So that's for those communities and populations whose rights have been violated or are at risk of being violated. One of the main components of HRE is this concept of empowerment. And it's the knowledge and awareness that human rights can empower individuals to see themselves and their communities as deserving of these basic human rights for survival and beyond survival to success. Thus, many health promotion experts consider health promotion to be an intervention target for a couple of reasons. The sense of being empowered allows individuals to be proactive in pursuit of fairness and social justice for themselves and their communities. And it allows them to prioritize growth and contribution to their communities over simply surviving or escaping the unstable environments in which they live. The kind of HRE that I'll be talking about is, which leads to empowerment, is referred to in the literature as transformational human rights education. And it's meant as a form of rehabilitation for the people whose rights have been violated. So now I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about the program of HRE and study. It's housed at the Center for Street Children in the Kilimanjaro region of northern Tanzania. It's a center for street youth that provides comprehensive care, and one of the significant aspects of it is an HRE curriculum. The mission of this center is to help children and youth to grow in mind, body, and spirit, and to build a more caring society for all, where family, neighborhood, and community cohesion is built and supported by the rule of law. As I mentioned, they use a transformational HRE perspective, which in the literature refers to people being involved in their communities, undergoing a process of self-reflection, having, especially for youth, leadership training and development, training in conflict resolution, and vocational training through either formal or non-formal education. The goal of this kind of education is for individuals to be able to recognize the violations that might have been inflicted on them, and as and when they occur, and to work to overcome those violations or to prevent them from happening again. So this particular center uses a number of different strategies. offer the chance to go to school on a daily basis, and their education, informal schools, is complemented with non-formal education in the center, which is primarily about what is human rights, what is the UN Charter of Human Rights, and how can we live and learn from it. So summary of the methods. There are 183 children in the sample. It's a comparative study, so there's three groups: street youth, human rights, educated youth. So these are youth who once lived on the street, but now live in the shelter, and school youth is about 60 in each. They're all boys, as per the dynamics of street youth in Tanzania. And there's two stages to this study. There's a qualitative stage and a quantitative stage. They happen concurrently. The quantitative stage, I used an importance scale, which I had to design and validate for this particular population. It included 29 items and about various life events, and children needed to rank the importance or prioritize each of those in order to live what is in Swahili considered a narrative of a good life. So they rated on a scale of 1 to 4 how important it was. There are two predominant subscales: current well-being and survival, and preparing for the future. And the analysis was quite simple. I just used a chi-square to determine whether there's a significant difference between the groups, and then a Bonpland post-hoc test to see where the pairwise difference was. The qualitative stage involved storytelling using a clinical psychodiagnostic method, but I used it not as a diagnostic method, I used it as a narrative method, called the thematic apperception test. Now, the reason I use storytelling is because in Tanzanian culture, especially the Bantu culture of sub-Saharan Africa, there is a common thread of storytelling, and there's an oral history. This is how oral histories are passed on. Children learn at a very young age how to gather an audience to tell a story, and how to tell a story from beginning, middle, and end. So I wanted to optimize on the children's storytelling capabilities in my study, because many of them are illiterate and can't read, which precludes traditional pencil and paper or even survey methods. So it was a developmentally, ethically, and culturally appropriate method to use, and it gave me incredibly rich data. So I'll share some of it with you. The idea is you showed each participant a picture, and these pictures have been tested cross-culturally and reliably elicit stories with the theme of achievement motivations. And so I used three pictures from the complete set of 20. And one of them is a picture of a boy sitting at a table looking at a violin. Another one is a man hanging on a rope. And another one is a woman looking out onto fields. They're purposely ambiguous to elicit a broad range of stories. But like I said, they've been reliably shown to elicit these themes of achievement and motivation. And the way that I analyzed these stories was using a sort of pseudo-narrative approach, where I treated the stories as narratives, and I conducted an initial inductive thematic coding procedure, and then followed it up with a deductive procedure using codes from the literature. So the overarching research question was very simply, are there differences in the life priorities and strategies for health and education goals among these three groups? So I'll first discuss the quantitative results. The quantitative analyses showed that the three groups of children were distinct in their priorities and what they considered to be important in their lives. So the three most important priorities for street children were to get good advice from adults, have time to do activities they enjoy, and to have a dependable place to sleep. These priorities are in line with what previous research would predict, actually. So research would suggest that there are both push and pull factors for children to be on the streets. So there are reasons that attract children to the streets, and there are reasons that take them away from the streets. One of the pull factors might be independence and freedom from parental authority that comes with living on the streets. So prioritizing having time to do activities I enjoy might be evidence of this freedom and independence. At the same time, research indicates that street children tend to express a deep need amounts of the qualitative data. The TNT stories also showed three distinct themes, and they mapped on to each of the three groups. The first theme was a sense of confusion and helplessness, and a focus on the present perspective. This theme showed up predominantly in the street children's stories, not surprisingly. For example, this is in response to a picture of a boy sitting down at a table playing a violin. He's thinking how his future life will be because he is now confused with life. He doesn't have money and doesn't know where to get food. He's confused because of marijuana, and that's why he's thinking too much. And he had a good life in the beginning, but not now, and that's why he's confused with life. So you can see at a very quick glance how many times the thing of confusion comes up. Former street children who had undergone this human rights education curriculum showed stories with more of a future perspective and more agency surrounding the transformative experiences they had regarding health and education. So this story by a 16-year-old boy was in response to the same picture. There was once a young man named Sikujua. His parents had passed away and he finally left for the streets. After a short while, he got a sponsor to help him in school. That made him so happy that he got worried in the end as to why that person decided to educate him. He went into class and thought about all that he had been doing in the streets. He decided to study very hard, and he is now expected to have a good life in the future. So just to reiterate, the theme for street children that emerged was confusion, helplessness, a sense of fatalism, and a focus on the present. Whereas street children in the rehab care focus more on growth, transformation, agency, and having a future perspective. I hope that these stories are representative of my data, but it's very difficult to pick one of 600 stories that really pinpoint one of these. And then finally, among school children, there was a sense of being determined and goal-oriented, and that being obedient, which is, I argue, a cultural norm, was a strategy that facilitated success, whether that was educationally or with regard to health. For example, a 14-year-old schoolboy, in response to the same picture, his story was as follows. One boy liked reading different types of books every time he finished school. He liked reading novels, newspapers, and other books. He also set his goals to pass his final exam. He thought if he did not study hard, his life in the future will be bad. So again, the themes here are determination, being goal-oriented, obedience, and education. So what we see from the qualitative data is that children who spend most of their time on the streets have narratives of confusion and helplessness, at least in this sample. But with just 1 year of human rights education, children who once lived on the streets seem to have had a transformative experience, or to be empowered to be more proactive in search of academic success. Finally, school youth expressed a sense of being goal-oriented and determined about their goals. So moving to the future, while the findings of this work are still preliminary, we can draw some implications for expanding this work. For example, it appears that human rights education, when done well, might be an effective curriculum to implement in comprehensive rehabilitative programs, so not as a standalone strategy. It may work well, primarily by transforming children's narratives such that they are empowered to promote their own health. Simultaneously, the curriculum might be pivotal in enabling agency and ownership of one's health and well-being. For example, this study showed that priorities can be changed from basic survival to academic success. At least at its core, human rights education has a role in empowering youth in unstable situations, and those situations in which their basic human rights are at risk, such as living on the streets or spending most of their time on the streets. This type of education under ideal circumstances allows for an understanding of one's entitlements and rights and reasons for wanting to achieve. Follow-up research, the two at the bottom, includes a more systematic evaluation of the